This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 19th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 204. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. The countdown to Justin Trudeau's pandemic power grab. Election day is September 20th. Guest Duff Conacher of Democracy Watch on why it's bad for both public health and public confidence in government. And Mario Canseco of Research Co. gazes into his crystal ball. We may not have a winner on September 20th. But first, Is It Just Me? Is it just me, or is it time for a change? Canadians did it in 2015 when they got rid of Stephen Harper, who put his own power before people. Will they do it again on September 20th? They have a chance to overthrow the government of Liberal Justin Trudeau, the most corrupt government in Canada. The weapons? Pencils and paper at a voting place near you. Trudeau launched a power grab election on August 15th. In May, he told Canadians that nobody wanted an election during a pandemic. He lied. The opposition Conservatives and the NDP have been a thorn in his side because they have made him feel uncomfortable by exposing Liberal corruption and incompetence. Trudeau's backroom includes some of the same spinners that kept Christy Clark and Gregor Robertson in power. He desperately wants a majority to get more control and have fewer questions. Remember sunny ways and hope and hard work? He left all that behind in 2015. His democratic reform promises went out the window. Trudeau admitted in August that he doesn't pay attention to monetary policy, but the number one job of a leader is to keep the economy running and to keep the public safe and healthy. On the day he called the election, there were 17,000 active cases of coronavirus across Canada. As of September 17th, there were more than 44,000. 669 Canadians have died from the virus since the election was called. The election was not required until October 2023. Justin Trudeau doesn't really care about seniors, the disabled, Indigenous, or the poor. He cares about himself. Maybe it's time for a Prime Minister O'Toole or a Prime Minister Singh. It's time for a peaceful revolution. Use your pencil and paper on September 20th. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. On September 15th, International Democracy Day, Democracy Watch and Integrity BC founder Wayne Crooks filed a case in federal court to contest Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's snap pandemic election. The next election was supposed to be in October 2023, but on August 15th, Trudeau chose an election for September 20th of 2021. Last May, he said that nobody wants an election in a pandemic, and he voted against the idea of such an election with members of all parties. My guest this week is Duff Conacher, co-founder of Democracy Watch. Duff, we're used to politicians saying one thing and doing another on so many different policies, but what does it do to the public trust and confidence in our system when a politician, a leader like Justin Trudeau, says that public health is more important than politics, and then does a major flip-flop like he did on August 15th.
Justin Trudeau actually denied in mid-July when he was asked whether he was traveling the country as a pre-election spending spree to essentially try and buy votes of Canadians with their own money. And he denied that. He said, no, we're just making announcements dealing with the COVID situation and with other programs, and said it was not at all about an election, and then a month later called an election. He didn't bring in the fixed election date law. That was Harper in 2007, and then he broke the law in 2008 by calling a snap election, his own law, and Democracy Watch challenged that in court. And what Trudeau did do, though, is vote along with MPs, as you mentioned, 327-1 against having an election during COVID, and that was at the end of May. So to have him reverse that And really, the only reason was because the Liberals were up in the polls in a region where they could possibly get a majority. He offered other reasons, but they just were not credible at all. None of them actually based on reality. And to see him do that, again, it just breeds cynicism, greater skepticism, turns a lot of voters off, which the Liberals are suffering from now because they've actually dropped in the polls since the election began. And deservedly so, because almost everyone who's examined the whole situation views this as a selfish grab for power by a power-mad prime minister.
When Trudeau came to power in 2015, he promised to do government differently. He promised to make government information, which is public information, open by default. He promised 2015 would be the last first past the post election. He was going to reform the system. Both promises broken. The minority parliament after the 2019 election was functioning, and there was no confidence vote before the election was called.
Yes, that is central to our system, and it's not specified in the law. It says the Governor General has the right to dissolve parliament, which, of course, any law has to recognize because it's in our written constitution, and you can't pass a law that overrides the constitution. But the Governor General does not dissolve parliament and call an election without the advice of the Prime Minister. And our whole case is that the section says that each general election must be held every 4 years on the third Monday in October. And the conventions that are incorporated and underlie that, just like conventions are incorporated into every law because they are unwritten and they exist from the traditions, are two things. One, yes, the Governor General has the power to dissolve parliament, but has not for decades done so without the Prime Minister advising it. And secondly, that the Governor General only does so when a government is operating and has the confidence of Parliament, if Parliament votes non-confidence in the government on a major issue like a budget or a speech from the throne. Trudeau, like Harper in 2008, tried to make the case that Parliament was dysfunctional. And he mentioned a couple of bills that he said had not gone through and were being blocked. And they were simply false claims. The Liberals have passed everything that they have proposed, or it was under review when Parliament shut down in mid-June, on the regular average timeline. You know, things don't pass the next day just because the government wants it to pass. In Parliament, usual review lasts 6 months to a year of any bill. And all the bills that he mentioned were on the regular timeline and actually have been delayed by the Liberals not moving them forward and Liberal MPs filibustering several committees, which meant the committees could not review any bills because they were caught up in a Liberal filibuster. And those committees were filibustered by Liberal MPs for months. So the delays were actually all on the Liberal side. And he was just making a false claim in the same way that Harper made false claims in September 2008 that the opposition parties didn't support him. The only judge of that is a vote of confidence. You can't just claim that opposition parties don't support a government. They are there to oppose. So they say things every day against the government. The test of non-confidence is an actual vote. And you can't have a vote when Parliament's closed. And Parliament was closed in August and July. And same as it was closed back in 2008 when Harper called the election. So our case is Parliament wanted to stay open. All the opposition party leaders said that. A majority of MPs voted against having an election, 327-1 against having an election. Why can one MP, the Prime Minister, then call an election? The majority of Parliament, the will of Parliament, should be upheld by the courts in the same way that the British Supreme Court rejected the prorogation, the shutting down of Parliament by the Prime Minister. Boris Johnson, back in a 2019 unanimous ruling, where they ruled that prorogation was illegal because parliamentarians, a majority of them, wanted Parliament to be open. And the Prime Minister, in that case, cannot just shut down Parliament. It's undemocratic and it's illegal.
I'm Bob Mackin. This is the Big Deal feature, and I'm continuing with my guest, Duff Conacher of Democracy Watch. We may not know the winner for several days because of counting of the mail-in ballots. Elections Canada had originally forecast there would be 5 million, then it forecast 2 to 3 million, but it now looks like only 1.2 million voters registered for the mail-in option. Elections Canada wanted a longer election, but Trudeau insisted on 36 days. Elections Canada has faced labor shortages. There's fewer voting stations due to the pandemic. There's no voting stations on university campuses, and the mail-in ballot is not as user-friendly as BC's was in 2020. I asked Duff Conacher if this election would also be harmful to democracy.
The overall context is very serious, and it's mostly Justin Trudeau's fault for calling a selfish, unnecessary election because the Liberals were up in the polls. But it's also impartially Elections Canada is to blame for the current situation because they said they were fine and they could hold an election in a pandemic just fine. They did call for more time to be given, but even with more time, I'm not sure whether they would fill the gaps in the jobs and or fill the gaps in terms of polling stations. There's one riding here in Toronto, usually has 90 plus polling stations. It's going to have 15. That's not a small difference. And Elections Canada should have known that they were not going to be able to find locations for polling stations because when they didn't know how many days they were going to have to prepare, because they don't control the number of days of the election, how many staff they were able to hire, and how many polling locations they were going to be able to set up. Without knowing those things, they shouldn't have ever answered that question. They should have said, we don't know whether we can do this properly during a pandemic because we've never done it before and we don't know these three key things. So I think there could be cases after the fact of people being denied the right to vote. There were huge problems in Newfoundland and Labrador with people receiving ballots. And there have been court cases that have followed that, challenging that they were denied the right to vote, including cases saying that the actual result in some ridings was changed because of the number of people denied the right to vote. And there's two types of cases that I could see being filed after the election. One, just a case saying I was denied the right to vote because of the system. And two, if enough people were denied the right to vote in a riding and the riding result was close, that people filing a case actually saying that a by-election should be held and the election overturned because of this denial of enough voters' right to vote. You have to prove that the election is close enough and enough people were denied that right in order to force a by-election. But I can see both cases being heard. If it's raining and cold in a bunch of locations across the country, there will be lineups. People will walk away. It's not good what's going to happen on Monday. And Elections Canada is warned of the problems and delays. The only good thing is more people, 18% more showed up to advance polls. And that's good. Those people have voted. But there's another 60 to 70%, if we have the usual voter turnout, that have not voted yet and will be voting on Monday or by mail-in ballot. And I'm predicting, unfortunately, many more problems on election day and with the mail-in ballots.
Do you think that Elections Canada is prepared to protect the integrity of this election from a potential challenge or from a potential foreign influence campaign? We saw what went on in the United States with Russia meddling in 2016 to help Trump get into power. Could we see something like that in this election by people favorable to the Chinese Communist Party to help Justin Trudeau stay in power?
Well, the key problem is the speed of response from Elections Canada and the actual enforcement officer who is called the Commissioner of Canada Elections. In terms of disinformation, the commissioner has responded. You had mentioned Justin Trudeau's promise in 2015 to change the election system and end the first past the post system. He made that promise and statement about 2,000 times during the election, never put any conditions on it, and then broke that promise. Democracy Watch filed a complaint, and the Commissioner of Canada Elections refused to enforce the one rule that's in the election law that says by any pretense or contrivance, you can't induce a voter to vote for you or vote against someone else or not vote. And pretense or contrivance, the dictionary definition is false claim. And Trudeau made a false claim. He said that the 2015 election would be the last first past the post election. And the commissioner refused to enforce the rule. He said that it had to be a fraudulent claim. But the word fraudulent is not actually in that rule. It is in BC's law. BC's law said by any fraudulent pretense or contrivance, You can't attempt to induce a voter to vote for you or against you, another candidate. But at the federal law, it doesn't say fraudulent. So that's one problem. He's refusing to enforce the Commissioner of Canada Elections, Yves Côté is his name. He's refusing to enforce the one rule we have. The other rule just makes false claims about some parts of candidates' history, like whether they have, you can't make a false claim about their education, their profession, whether they've been charged with a crime. It's very limited. It should be much broader. All false claims should be illegal. And when they are coming from a foreign source, whether it's a government or lobby group, the commissioners rolled over in the past on that as well, going back to the 2008 election, when there were robocalls that were false about a candidate in the Saanich Gulf Islands riding in BC. And the Commissioner of Canada Elections investigated, and he rolled over and said, oh, well, the calls came from the US and I can't investigate in the US. He could have, but he just decided to roll over and give that up. And then he let the Conservatives off the hook, even though there was clear evidence that the Conservative Party was behind a national false robocall campaign that happened in the 2011 election. One person was prosecuted, but the party was left off the hook, even though it was their database that was used. So we have a commissioner who is not enforcing the rules that are there, not enforcing them strongly enough, and I don't think has the resources to actually investigate and enforce something in real time during an election. It doesn't help much to find someone guilty a year later if the election results have been affected. It's very difficult for any judge to step in at that point and say, oh, I'm going to overturn an election because this fraud has been found a year later by a commissioner. So the whole system needs more resources. We need more clear rules because the commissioner won't enforce the rules. They need to be broader. And we need more proactive powers for the commissioner to stop things from happening and the resources to stop things from happening during elections rather than a year or two later. All these things need to be cleaned up or we have a real threat of dishonest elections that are still vulnerable to interference by foreign powers.
That was my guest, Duff Conacher of Democracy Watch. Find out more information at democracywatch.ca. The 44th Canadian federal election is September 20th, but it might take longer to declare a winner due to the mail-in ballots. There are more than 1.2 million of them. My guest is Mario Canseco, president of Research Co. What should we watch for on election night?
Well, I think one of the crucial aspects, which we already got used to because we had an election where we had a lot of mail-in ballots provincially back in October of 2020. And also we had the experience of the US election where people went to bed watching Donald Trump leading in states like Michigan and also Pennsylvania. And they woke up to the news that with the mail-in ballots, Joe Biden was now ahead. So if you have a bunch of close ridings, particularly here in DC, the mail-in ballots are going to be counted on Tuesday. So it's going to be too early for anybody, especially in those close ridings in Metro Vancouver and the Fraser Valley, to actually claim that they won the election before all of the mail-in ballots have been counted. And this could also play a role in the color of the government and the size of the government. So it's going to be one of those election nights where unless there's an unsurmountable trend in favor of the Liberals, it's going to be tough for anybody, including the networks themselves, to try to call this.
Will the NDP vote stay loyal to the NDP, or will it be a last-minute change from the NDP and the Greens to the Liberals?
Well, I think that is the million-dollar question, particularly here in BC. We haven't seen the NDP climbing the charts in Quebec or in Ontario, but in BC, they've done very well. I think there's been a little bit of identification among those people who are happy or are happy still with how the BC NDP government has been handling the COVID-19 pandemic. But it's definitely problematic because in a way you could point to the Liberals if you're happy with the way the vaccination rollout happened, or you could point to the Liberals if the environmental policies are the things that you care about, especially because of Andrew Weber's endorsement. There's always a difficulty for the NDP to sustain the level it has, particularly here in British Columbia, in the final stages of the campaign. The last time around, a lot of people were expecting them to be closer to 20%, and they ended up getting 16%. So that is one of the situations that we need to watch out for. Will we have a lot of voters who are thinking of voting for the NDP and end up choosing the Liberals because they fear a conservative government?
Aaron O'Toole has positioned himself as a red Tory. You think that'll push more voters to Maxime Bernier and the People's Party?
Well, it certainly gave Justin Trudeau an opportunity to try to connect emotionally after the incident we had with the gravel, after the screams that he was subjected to when he was in British Columbia being interviewed. It allowed him to establish that emotional connection of I'm the one who's doing my best. I don't think this is the way this should be happening. There's definitely people who are dissatisfied with the fact that we have some of these protests happening. And to me, that is the big wild card on election day. You know, we know that the People's Party voter is not particularly in favor of vaccinations or masks. Are they going to go through the trouble of wearing a mask and casting a ballot on Monday? Or did they have the wherewithal to request their ballot a few weeks ago and then sent it in? That is one of the major issues here. Now, if we look a little bit into the future, if we start to have conversations about whether we should change the electoral system, this is going to be one of them. Do you really want a situation where the People's Party can get 7 or 8% of the vote and therefore get 7 or 8% of the seats? So we will see where that situation ends up, but it could certainly hurt Erin O'Toole in some of those close ridings.
What do you think that will be the result of this election?
Well, I think what we've seen from the Liberals is the fact that support has come back in Ontario. Quebec, we've seen a little bit of a surge for the Bloc. Atlantic Canada seems to be well in hand. They're not going to get a lot of seats in Alberta or in Manitoba or Saskatchewan. It's ultimately about defending territory here. And, you know, there's a couple of seats that are certainly at play. But at this stage, they look well poised of getting a minority government unless something really changes drastically over the next couple of days. The main situation in BC is that because the three parties were essentially tied just a few days ago, we could wind up with the NDP ahead of the Conservatives, but not getting a lot of seats because of the breaks, or with the Conservatives winning, but who knows exactly how many seats they are going to get. They could actually have a higher share of the vote, but not get the seats if in specific ridings we see the People's Party creeping in. So it's going to be a long election, and certainly one where a lot of seats in British Columbia are not going to be decided until we count all the mail-in ballots.
That was my guest, Mario Canseco, president of Research Co.
Justin P.J. Trudeau. Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways. We're going to make it a criminal offense for anyone to threaten or intimidate any healthcare practitioner on their way into work, in the practice of their exercise of their duty, or a patient on their way to get medical services. It's unfortunate, really, that we have to get to this point where we have to point out that that's not something that should be done.
Spy, right here!
Isn't there a hospital you should be going to bother right now?
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In Kyoto news, Japan's top COVID-19 advisor says peak of fifth wave over. Shigeru Omi told the House of Counselors Health Committee that the peak of the fifth wave has largely passed, but warned that a close eye must still be kept on the country's overburdened medical system. Omi attributed the downtrend in infections to progress of vaccinations, reduced foot traffic, suspension of alcohol in dining establishments, and a high rate of mask wearing. But he cautioned that hastily easing anti-pandemic restrictions could lead to a sixth wave of infections, especially with colder weather approaching. In the Taiwan news, two-headed snake found in South Taiwan Elementary School. Students in Zhangpu Township suddenly happened upon a snake in the grass under the flag-raising platform. The school's principal, Lin Chun-jung, swept the snake into a bucket and realized that it had two heads. The Chai Yi County Rescue Association said the market value of the snake is over 1 million New Taiwan dollars, but donated it to National Chai Yi University College of Life Sciences for research. The snake's deformity could have been the result of pesticide pollution in the environment. In stuff.co.nz, Burger Afloat, New Zealand's first floating burger bar to open in the mountains on Lake Dunstan Trail. At the end of a spectacular cliff-side walking and cycling track is a coffee shop, known as Coffee Afloat, It has become a hit with a rotating team of 6 baristas serving more than 100 cyclists on busy days. It's spawned a sequel. The first burger will be flipped on September 24th as part of Eat Taste Central, a month-long celebration of Central Otago's food and wine scene. The burger bar, known as Burger Afloat, will sit on a new boat next to the existing coffee barge. That's around the rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, New York-based transit company to launch rapid Seattle to Portland routes, but only on holidays. The company, called Our Bus, will launch as a holiday service offering 3-hour and 20-minute trips on days with a high volume of travelers. The service will run on Indigenous Peoples Day, October 11th, and again on Thanksgiving and Christmas. The service will cost $25 per one-way ticket, which is $3 cheaper than a Greyhound ticket for the same route, and about $10 cheaper than the cheapest Amtrak train ticket from Seattle to Portland. In the Olympian, residents voice frustration about lack of police response to violent downtown clash. The Olympia City Council heard multiple complaints from residents, a business owner, and a city council candidate about the lack of police presence downtown when the Proud Boys and anti-fascists, or Antifa, violently clashed in the streets on September 4th. The two groups antagonized one another and clashed throughout the day. Multiple assaults were reported, including one in which a woman told police she was chased and assaulted by Proud Boys. Video released by police shows men striking an Antifa member who then runs into the transit center, turns around, and appears to fire 5 shots in the direction of the other group, allegedly striking a Proud Boy in the leg. In Czech news, 3 endangered J-pod orcas pregnant, say researchers. Researchers using a drone detected 3 whales that appeared pregnant. There are currently only 74 of the endangered southern resident killer whales, and there's hope the new pregnancies could increase those numbers, but researchers say it's cautious optimism. The last baby boom was in 2015 and 2016. 6 whales were born, but only 2 are still alive. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to everyone who is taking part in the 40th anniversary Terry Fox Run, the second held virtually due to the pandemic. Wherever you are in the world, thank you for doing your part to remember Terry and to help complete his mission to find a cure for cancer. As Terry said, somewhere, the hurting must stop. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
Vaccine, I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, cause once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 19th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on September 19th in 1985, Tipper Gore, Al Gore's wife, formed the Parents Music Resource Center in a campaign against obscenity in music? Frank Zappa and Dee Snider led the charge against censorship. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Get out and vote. Until next week.